Mr. Lingard, Reel 2. We're talking about your time at HMS Collingwood Shore Station. That's near Portsmouth. We're not quite sure where, just at the moment. From roughly speaking, June to September 1940, month either side. And we're going through a typical day. And you were talking about the sort of seamanship lectures and that kind of thing. What about knots and splices? How far did you go into knots and splices? Because, you know, it's quite a big subject.
Well, when you get when you went in the classroom there was all sorts of ropes hanging on the wall, and there's also a piece of rope hanging across the room, and dangling from that was various ropes. And your job was to stand in front of one of these, and the instructor would say, OK, I'll teach you how to do a back splice now. And believe me, sometimes it come quite easy to some people, and some people it was so damned hard, it was unbelievable. But that he used to get all these sessions there on splicing. And that went on for days, that did, all sorts of splices, long splices, short splices, eye splicing. This goes on for days, until most of us have got the hang of it, you know.
Can you explain a bit about what are all those things, long splices, eye splicing? I mean, splicing is wires, isn't it?
Or no, this was ropes.
It's just ropes.
Wire splicing later.
All right.
When you learnt a little bit more. Well, the splicing was, you know, joining two ropes together. They always said, the instructor would say, if you splice a rope together, it will never break on a splice. It will break before or after, because the rope is twice as thick, so it won't break on a splice. And you used to get little records of all this. Of how many tucks you do. He says the minimum amount you must do is 3 tucks of rope to each splice. You can do 4 or 5. And if you wanted to taper off at the end, as a double rope gets slimmer, then you must cut a strand out after every hook to make it thinner. He said, and therefore, at the end of the day, when you put a whipping on it, which is a rope, piece of string or cotton, round the end of it, a whipping on the end, he said, and that will, and then he starts to teach you all about whipping. You know, there's dozens and dozens of different types of whipping. And he used to teach you all this. And at the end of the day, he'd come to him and he'd say, here's a piece of rope, stick us a back splice in this. So you put a knot in it and do a back splice in that, put such and such a whipping on it. And you'd do it completely, very pleased with yourself. And he'd say, no, that's bloody wrong. You see, and he didn't do it, made you do it again. But it was good training. But after that, they went on, after you'd learnt all this about ropes, which was very good, they start taking you in another place, and they start to teach you wire splicing, and that was murder.
Why? What was so much more difficult about it?
Rope is pretty easy, because it had been used so many times with the different people. You say, it was pretty soft to your fingers, but when you got to wire splicing, that was it was stiff and it was steel wire. And you do it backwards to what you do ordinary splicing. Rope splicing, you do it, you know, against the grain of the rope, but with wire, you do it with the grain. And that was terrible. You used to get splints and cuts in your fingers, you know. But the instructors were pretty good. They're pretty good. I would never complain about any of them.
What about, were you still learning to box a compass?
Yeah. In the different classes as you go through all this. That'll be where you say, you know, the compass readings and tell you all about the different types of compasses. And that starts you off by reading all the cardinal points of the compass. And one day you learn the first 4, north, south, east and west, you know, and then you go through, the next day you go through some, until you could, alphabetical-wise, you could go through the whole of the compass and rattle it off like you could the ABC. See? Not in your own mind. You knew where the hell it was. You didn't, but you could rattle it off easily. And they'd done that. Sometimes you used to think it was a waste of time because you thought, Arsenal never be there reading a compass, you know. But I suppose it did come in handy, particularly if he was on watch and he was giving a bearing somewhere. But a lot of us thought it was a waste of time. But I suppose they knew what they were doing, they were instructors, they knew what was trying to get into your thick head.
Any other seamanship stuff?
Most of it was, we had the ordinary common rifle drill. And splitting with rifles, you know, splitting a 303 down, bringing it down and cleaning it and putting it that.
And did you actually do any firing?
Yes, you went to a rifle range and they put a target up and you had about 6 rounds, I think that was about all you had, about 6 rounds, and you'd done the usual postures on the floor and pointed this thing at a target. And that, as far as I can remember, the only thing we ever did have, and we had bayonet practice. And
what was that like?
That was hilarious, that was, because you were sticking the things in a sandbag strung between two ropes. And as long as you was bawling your head off, I thought that was great, you know, charging at these sandbags, shouting obscene things. You thought, oh, that was great. But, you know, I suppose it's comical, really, it is. But, yeah, it was part and parcel of the job, you know, and crawling on the floor with a rifle slung on your back. But the drill at Collingwood, I thought, you know, it was pretty fair.
What about this assault course? You mentioned an assault course earlier. Was that a...
It was a gentle assault course, that was. You'd done the usual thing, running through muddy water, crawling under some barbed wire, climbing over sort of style effect things, you know. All this had to be done in a certain amount of time, you know. We're timing you on this, you know. Of course, you weren't wearing a uniform then, you were just wearing a boiler suit, you know, so it didn't matter if you got mucky, you only had to wash your boiler suit and your underwear. Yeah, you had the usual assault courses.
Any rowing, you know, or any, you know...
Nothing at all.
Nothing to do with water at all?
No.
Nothing practical?
Yeah. The only thing rowing you'd done was on a hull of a boat that was on a piece of concrete, and the instructor used to sit at the end there and he used to tell you how to dip the oars and how to lift them, but you wasn't on water, you was on a lump of concrete. That was the only rowing you ever did there. But I'll tell you a bit more about that when I went to Whale Island.
Anything else? Well, so you'd be doing these sessions during the day. Nothing else you can think of at the moment, but that together.
Not really. You went to the usual school classes, you know, and you read a little bit about history and about the naval history, of course.
Was that a big thing? Were they trying to get you proud of the Navy?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're trying to make you proud of it, yeah. I must say that they made you so proud, they never shouted or bawled at you. You know, they shouted at you to do things right, but never for doing anything wrong. And the officers was the same. I found that, you know, things were easy, really.
Well, how did you get on with the instructors? Tell me a bit more about
that. The instructors got on fine with them. Fine. What the instructors was doing, they were doing, so they'd been doing it for so long, they knew every word and every step they were doing. And they had a lot of patience with a lot of young recruits who hadn't got a clue. They had a lot of patience with us. Even sewing. I'd never sewn a button on in my life until I sat in a classroom. And the instructor showed me how to thread a needle and how to tie a knot in the end of the cotton. Otherwise, I'd have been pulling the cotton through. But I must say, they were very patient in them days.
And they knew the stuff?
Oh, I think they did know the stuff, yeah. So I think myself that deep down, they knew the stuff because if there was a failure at it, they was put to sea. That was the theory in the school, that if they're no good at the job, stick them on a ship.
And they were sort of fair to you.
They were very fair.
You mentioned the officers. What about? Did you see much of the officers, and how did you go?
Didn't see a great lot of them. Most of them was at passing out parades, and that was a grand turnout. And you used to have practice of this, a dummy run of passing out parades. And the officers used to. And that was mostly sub lieutenants. But by the time you're doing the real passing out parade, you know, he was probably a 2.5 ringer or something like that. You know, 2 ringer, 2.5 ringer. But the young sub-lieutenants, they tend to be a bit cocky with it, you know. But you took that as just one of those things. But the senior officers, who's carrying rank, they seem great, you know. They treat us as young lads. We were young boys to them. But the young sub-lieutenants, they was only about 18 or 19, only about a year, 18 months older than me, you know.
How did you get on with the other recruits?
All right, one or two cried at night on the bunks. One or two wet themselves on parade when they were shouted at. All right, I made friends with a couple. You know, you picked your own friends in those days.
What were you looking for in a friend then?
One who would sympathise with me and one who could stand a good joke, you know. But there was one or two there who hated it. They joined up and they hated every minute of it, and that I couldn't stand. I thought, you're in, you might as well stick it out, you know. I knew I was only in for during the war years,
Did you tend to hang around with people from your own area, Walsall, stuff?
I got on with Londoners, funny as it may seem, better than anybody else. There were several Midlanders there, and I didn't seem to hit it off with those very well. But the Cockney lads, I used to get on with them great. In fact, when I came home on my first leave, my mother thought I'd changed altogether because I was talking like a Cockney.
Was there any bullies amongst them that you were aware of?
No, there was one or two show-offs there, but nothing very much. As I say, when I first went in there, and they said, and foolishly I said boxing, you know, for a new where I was, I shoved in a bloody ring, with a chap who was about 2 foot taller than me. I must admit, he was the same weight, but by God, he had a 2 foot reach longer than mine. I was punched all round the ring, you know, and I thought, this is a fool's paradise, this is here, you know. But,
Did you stop after that?
No, I went up a couple of times, but, you know, you was...
Was this for the team, or just practising for the team?
No, this was, you know, at PT. You know, the PT, the instructor said, OK, boxing, up in the ring, here's your gloves, you know. Bill Smith, get up there with him. You're both the same weight, because you used to get weighed, you know, 7 stone, ringing wet. He's 7 stone, ringing wet, and he was 6 foot 2. He was only 5 foot 4, you know. And he'd got a reach, which was unbelievable. He put his fist out, and I was over the other side. But, you know, you never really got hurt. You know, I had nosebleeds, you know, a couple of bruises on my face, but nothing serious. But when I was in the ring and I got somebody my own size, you know, that was all right, that was. That
you
was
quite
great.
Enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, thought it was great fun there.
So, going back into this typical day that we've got... Well, you mentioned the canteen.
Yeah.
How was the canteen? I mean, what did it offer?
Well, the usual thing, you know, cakes, tea, cocoa.
It's a dry canteen, then?
Yeah. Oh, no beer. No, only young lads weren't allowed to drink. I never remember any coffee anywhere. I never remember any having coffee. It was always tea, cocoa. They never seemed to have anything else, only lemonade. They never seemed to have... orange juice or grapefruit juice. It always lemonade, you know, fizzy water.
Was there anything for you to do in the canteen? I mean, was there games,
darts? Darts and dominoes. Used to sit there playing cards, and the money was kept under the table, because if the petty officer come in, he was on the charge for gambling. But they used to get the money on little ledges on the seats, you know, or between the legs on the stool.
What was the gambling game of choice? Did you do it?
I learned to play brag when I was there. I'd never played brag in my life. And
three card or five card? Yeah,
five card brag. And I'd never played in my life until I was there. But I wasn't a great card player. I didn't enjoy it very much, mainly because I was always losing. I used to lose money on it. I didn't like it. But
now you've been on £3, which is an awful lot.
It was a lot of money.
And now you were down to, well... whatever.
7 and 6.
Did you miss it? I mean, how did you cope on the
pay? Oh, I was fed. The 7 and 6 was to buy... I never bought any soap while I was in the Navy. It was a push of soap, that yellow stuff. But I used to buy razor blades. Cigarettes. I used to smoke a little bit, but not very much. And, no, the 7 and 6
you didn't feel a big come down?
No, none at all.
Had you given your money to your mum?
Yeah, as I say, my mother used to give me pocket money, you see. When I went to work for the Walsall Electric Company, I used to get 7 shillings a week. I used to have sixpence out of that.
And when you got 3 quid, how much would you get out of that?
I used to have a pound.
So you weren't that much worse off?
Oh, no. No, I used to have a pound, yeah.
What about preparing for kit inspections? I don't know if you can talk about that as a separate thing. I presume they had at least a weekly big kit inspection.
They did.
Tell me about, how would you prepare... How bad did they go on it? How strict was it? And what happened when you actually had it?
The kit inspection was very strict. Very strict. The biggest argument about kit inspection was to get out of the scruffy ones in the class and give them a right lecturing. Because there was one or two very untidy fellas, you know, dirty underwear, dirty socks, you know, all sorts of things. Bugs in the air, some of them. And the biggest problem was getting them clean so that everybody was on one level when the chief come round, chief petty officer come round first and had a look, you know, and then the duty officer. and the kit inspection was carried on. As you see today, where they turned kit over and all that, I can never remember that happening. I can always remember that an officer coming round and he'd lift the blankets up, you know, with a cane and look underneath, but he would never disturb them. And he would never, ever tip the boots over to look at the bottoms. He'd probably look at the heels of the shoes, you know, turn the shoe round. But I can't ever remember any officer upsetting anybody, you know, and making a fool of them. But I can remember the chiefs coming in, and he knew the untidy ones, he knew the scruffy buggers, you know, coming in, and he would give them a right telling off, you know. But personally myself, I don't get embarrassed. I used to enjoy discipline. I thought it was great.
Well, talk a bit about your attitude to discipline. I mean, have you had much discipline at home or at work? I mean, how did the naval discipline strike you?
Discipline at home was, it wasn't strict or anything. My mother used to make me do everything because she was in a full-time job. And I used to come home from school and have my sandwiches over lunchtime. And so it was a case of having to put everything away when you finished with it. Even today I do exactly the same thing. Put everything away. When you've used it, don't leave it, put it away. And discipline in the Navy, you know, was just like being at home to me. Everything you used, you washed it up and put it away. Knives and forks, you wash it up, put it away. Everything. And it was no hardship for me. Some of the lads, it was a hardship because they'd never even washed a cup up in their life, some of them. And it was a hardship for them. But to me, it was pretty easy come, easy go, you know. It's the same as you see a picture on the wall. It's got to be straight. If it's crooked, I have to go and straighten it. So
you didn't kick against it at all?
None at all. I thought it was great. Because you knew where you were. You knew exactly what class you was in. And you knew your life was ruled that way. And you don't step out of line, otherwise you get into trouble. So it was easier to join the lot and be straight with everything. I found life was much easier.
Now, any particular stories or anything that happened while you were there, you know, any events or a humorous instance, or was it just...
The only thing that stuck out in my mind was football. I used to play a bit of rugby when I was at school. I used to like rugby because it was rough and tumble, but football, and we was picked out for a football team. And I said, what position do you play? And I thought, my God, I don't even know. I know there's a chap between them stumps and he's a goalkeeper. That's as much as I know about football. And they said, OK. So they picked a team out and I said, OK, you're outside right. I hadn't got a clue what it meant. So I was outside right. And of course, I hadn't got a clue about kicking a football, you know, one way or the other. And I got a right old rollicking idea about that match, yeah. And I reckon I lost the team by about 14-0, you know, through me. I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. But rugby, if it had been rugby, it had been a different thing. You know, I enjoyed a game, but football, I couldn't make head and tail of it. But that was a bit embarrassing, that was, because I got a right telling off once in front of all the players, you know, give me a right telling off. So that I never played football again after that. I wasn't picked to play football after that.
Now, then the next thing would be passing out. What do you remember of your passing out? That would be around about September 1940, if you went there.
Yes, it would, yeah. September.
Well,
yeah.
What do you remember of the passing out?
Passing out was one of those things where everybody had to be up early, you know. Everybody got up at 6, but this time you got up at 5. Some was up at 4:30. They were still cleaning shoes, which they'd been cleaning for the last few months. Still cleaning, making everything was perfect. And of course, the instructor, there's two instructors, there was a petty officer and the chief petty officer. The petty officer used to come in first. We thought there was sirs, you know, we used to call him sir. He used to come in and he'd make sure that everything was right for his chief, for the chief to come in. Everything was right. Your hat had to be dead square. No messing on one side, on the back, had to be dead square. Everything had to be right. And we was all told that if you pass out on this parade, then you won't stay here. You'll go to a ship. And everybody wanted to get out and go to a ship. That was the main object of everything. There was one or two failed on the wayside which got sent home, either medically, well, there was falsifying the medical issue, I don't know. Some went a bit berserk, one or two, you know, went a bit mental, couldn't stand it, and they went home. But biggest majority of the 30 or 40 that was in the class, they were there on parade. And I must admit that the parade itself went off absolutely marvellous. And the commanding officer, I think he was a commander, three-ringer, who took the salute and everything, and he commended on the different class. I think it was about six classes that passed out on that parade. But good or bad, they passed out everyone. They wanted them out. They'd got some more coming in. If you'd have walked along there with two walking sticks or a crutch, you'd have passed out. But everybody was proud of being there. Well, you can tell, when they come out of there, you was proud of wearing the uniform and the hat and the shirt. The only thing that disillusioned was your collar. It was still almost black instead of being blue. And the main object was to get some bleach and bleach it white almost, you see. That was the main object. But the passing out parade, it was great. In those days, I liked discipline. I liked bullshit. I thought it was great. Mainly because you had no responsibilities. You were told what to do, and as long as you'd done it, you was all right.
You've been told you were going to go for stoker training.
Yes, at the end of that.
What happened? You know, you got to the end of the...
Went in front of a board at the end of the training, you see. And went in front of a board there. And they said, OK, look at your record. No, you was a mechanic. I said, no, I was never a mechanic in my life. And they said, well, you were down as a trainee mechanic. I said, I was a grease monkey. I knew anything about you. They said, do you know how the engine works? And I said, I ain't got a clue. I had, but I wasn't going to tell them. I couldn't imagine myself down in there shoveling coal. That was stuck in my mind. And I thought, I don't want to be below water level. That doesn't thrill me at all. So I thought, I've had enough of this. So I pleaded guilty of being ignorant of engines of anything. And they said, OK, right. cooking, we'd like to train you as a cook. I thought, no chance of that.
Why not? I mean, that's above water.
I know it is. I thought, no, I'll poison everybody on the ship. I would. No, I thought, no chance of that. Gunnery. I thought, yeah, that's above deck, isn't it, gunnery? I didn't realise that it isn't always above the deck. But I thought, OK, gunnery. So, OK, then, we'll train you as a gunner. So then I was sent from there to HMS Victory, Pompey Barracks. And I was waiting around there to go to HMS Excellent. I hadn't got a clue where it was or what it was. But I know they was going to train me as a gunner. So while I was in Pompey Barracks there...
And that would be sort of September to when?
That was October-ish, October.
September, October at that time.
Mm-hmm. In Pompey Barracks.
So what was it like in barracks?
After living at Collingwood in those huts, which were immaculately clean, and you were sleeping in bunk beds, moving into Pompey Barracks was murder. I was on the second or third floor, I think I was on, and everybody slept in hammocks, and there wasn't 2 inches between each hammock. You were so close together, it was unbelievable. And the stench in there in the morning... Because you couldn't open the blooming windows, you know. All the windows were jammed. You couldn't open them. And the smell in there was terrible in the morning. And, of course, you know, when the old bugle blows to get up in the morning, everybody's tumbling out the hammocks and you can't find off your kit, you know. Somebody nicked your boots. Somebody's nicked your blooming socks. But once you got into the routine of Pompey Barracks and found out a nice place to sling your bloody hammock, up a corner somewhere, out the way of everybody... Things settle down a little bit.
It takes hammocks because some people have trouble with them at first.
Oh, I thought that'd be great. I was taught at the training school. We were taught how to sling a hammock and how to tie it up properly, you know, and how to lash it. You were taught all that at the training school, and I found out that once you got some stretches in each end of your hammock to hold the strands open, and you pulled it nice and tight, you know, you could lie almost rigid, you know. But some of them used to sling the hammocks like a sausage, you know, and they were sleeping with the feet above their head. But I enjoyed it.
What were you doing while you were at Pompey, HMS Victory?
Everything. They're the usual parades and drills in the morning, but you was left to your own devices most of the time. You was called out for different sort of jobs of cleaning toilets, sweeping the parade ground, all sorts of jobs. As I say, when I was there, somebody was saying, you know, has anybody got a driving licence? And I had a provisional driving licence. And they said, great, can you ride a motorbike? I said, yes, I've never been on a motorbike in my life. And I said, yeah, of course I can. So I was roped in there. They gave me a brown leather jerkin, a crash helmet, which was like a saucepan it was, you know, without a handle on, and a pair of gauntlets. And I said, okay, right out. Do you know where so-and-so is? I said, no. And they give me a little map and told me to go to Fratton with this message. Lovely yellow gloves out, gauntlets, you know, on a motorbike. Never driven a motorbike in my life. But I managed to get around all right. And I wasn't an auxiliary cyclist. I was something else, they called it. I was like a relief one. But I enjoyed that. I thought it was great fun.
No trouble with the bike, then?
Fell off it a couple of times. No problem. It was an aerial 250. It wasn't a powerful thing, you know, it was only an aerial 250. But I enjoyed it. They used to give me a pass to get in and out the gate. Yeah, I thought it was great fun, I did. Biggest part of the day was sitting next to the guard room on a bench, waiting for a message to be taken. I would think out of the 8 hours a day, you sat there for 6.5 hours. And out of that, you had half an hour for your dinner and stuff like that, you know. But it was sitting around most of the day. It was a job, and nobody bothered me. I found out that if you walked around with your helmet, you know, your helmet and your yellow, nobody bothered you. Yeah, you could walk around all day like that. It was great. And then I went to the drafting office there.
Did you go out much in the evening?
No. Money was the main thing, you know. I didn't drink. If I did drink in those days, it was only half a pint. Which was about threepence, I think, something like that, threepence.
Were you warned of the dangers for a young lad in Portsmouth?
Oh, yes, you get all about the scrubbers and all that, you know, we get warned about all that. Went to film shows on about venereal disease and that, you know, at film shows of all that. And they made you sick, some of the films that they're showing to you, you know. And these are things you mustn't do. So you found out after coming out of there, you wouldn't walk within 200 yards of any girl outside, you know, in case you caught something.
It did put you off then.
It certainly did. You put a good many off, yeah. Put a good many off, that did. A lot of sailors, young lads like myself, found out that the Wrens wouldn't speak to you. I don't know anybody out there who went out with the Wren or took them to the cinema at all. I think the Wrens had the same sort of films as we had, I should think, and they were always told, don't go out with Jack because he's only after one thing, you know. And I think they took it to heart too, because I can't remember anybody ever going out with the Wren. One got me into some trouble. I was on guard duty in Victory. And I was at a wicket gate on the far side, on the east side. There was a little wicket gate which led to the captain's quarters. And nobody, literally nobody, went in and out of that gate, only the skipper. He was a four-ringer, I think. And I was on guard duty there. I used to patrol a little stretch up there, nobody. Anyway, there was a disturbance the other side of the gate, and it was a wren. And this was after midnight. And she should have been in barracks by now. I don't know where she'd been. And she said, will you let me out the gate? And I said, I can't do that. Anyway, she talked me into opening the gate and loosing around through the wicket gate, and away she went. And she got picked up, and she reported me, and I got on a jankers for that, I did. Doing her a favour. And before I knew where I was, the officer of the guard come up, and he says, there's just been a wren picked up outside and you loosed out the captain's wicket gate. And I said, no. He said, don't deny it. And I said, no, I haven't seen a soul. And of course, what they do, a wren officer comes in with his wren and she said, that's the chap who loosed me out the gate. So they put me in a cell, took all my clothes off me, took my belt off me, my belt, you know, khaki belt, took that, took my gaiters off me, took my rifle off me, took my hat off me, put me in the cell, and I said, you're on a charge. And the next morning, a young officer came there, and I was put on a charge there. And I think he gave me 7 days, number 11s or something.
Confined to barracks?
Yeah, it was confined to barracks.